Our guest today on Meet the Press is the president's chief economic advisor, George P. Shultz, secretary of the Treasury and assistant to the president. Secretary Shultz also serves as chairman of the Cost of Living Council and is a member of the new Emergency Energy Action Group. He entered the Nixon administration in 1969 as Secretary of Labor. We'll have the first questions now from Irving R. Levine of NBC News.
Secretary Shultz, this is the first Sunday that gasoline stations across the country are closed on a voluntary basis to conserve fuel to discourage Americans from driving. There apparently are three options before the government on other ways to deal in a more drastic measure with conserving fuel: higher taxes, higher prices, or rationing. Which do you prefer?
Well, I think there are many more options than that. And the point is, there are a great many ways in which people can save their consumption of various fuels and do it on a voluntary basis. For instance, carpooling and things of that kind that have a chance of cutting down the amount by which we fall short. But in general, in answer to your question, I think it's better to solve these problems through the price system. Let the price rise, as it is absolutely bound to do.
But would not higher prices for gasoline favor higher income groups to the disadvantage of lower paid people?
Not necessarily. Obviously, you have a family budget with so much purchase of gasoline and fuel oil, and to the extent that lower income groups use proportionate to their income a little bit more than higher income groups, it has some of that effect. But I don't think it's a major problem in the family budget.
But would not a lower price...
It's much more of a problem if we don't pay the price that is necessary and we don't have any fuel.
But would not a person with a big income feel free to buy whatever amount of gas is necessary to do the driving that he wishes to do, where a lower-income person would not be able to?
That is true of all kinds of things that are reflected in the buying power of people at different incomes.
Do you oppose rationing entirely, even as a last resort?
Well, I've said it should be the absolute last resort, and I'm not really sure that it is a genuine alternative in the sense of being really a workable type of system. Of course, there are various kinds of rationing, and depending upon how it's designed, it could work better or worse. I think it is worth remembering that toward the end of World War II, when we had patriotic fervor and so on, we had 6,000 people in OPA enforcing or getting after people in the black market, which I think gives you an idea of the difficulties with a rationing system.
You've just met Irving R. Levine of NBC News. The other questioners on our panel today are Hobart Rowan of the Washington Post, Harry B. Ellis of the Christian Science Monitor, and Carl T. Rowan of the Chicago Daily News. Lawrence Spivak, regular member of the Meet the Press panel, will be back next week. We'll continue the questions now with Hobart Rowan.
Mr. Secretary, many Americans feel that the Nixon administration is not leveling with them on the extent and possible severity, duration of the energy crisis. For example, Mr. Robert Anderson, who's head of the Atlantic Richfield Company and a prominent Republican, says the situation isn't temporary but potentially catastrophic. Those are his words. Many industries say they face shortages of 30% to 40% of their fuel supplies. Can you assure the American people that the administration is not papering over the degree of this crisis?
The president has been calling attention to this problem since, in terms of a formal message, June 1971, 2.5 years ago. And he's delivered two formal messages to the Congress on energy as a subject and several addresses to the nation and taken all kinds of action. There's no doubt in anybody's mind that I know of that we have a genuine crisis, a critical problem that is immediate and also has a long-range aspect to it. So I think that strong and clear measures are called for, and they are being undertaken, and there is no effort to paper over anything. Quite the contrary. The effort has been to get people awake to the problem. And I must say, I think the Arabs have done us a great favor, at least in that respect. Finally, everybody's awake. and we know we have a problem.
Well, you say strong and clear actions are indicated. Would you tell us what those actions should be, in your view? You tell Mr. Levine that we don't necessarily have to get into rationing. What can be done in the short run to handle the critical short problem, and what do you propose for the long-run problem?
Well, the prices are going to have to go up, and that makes a big difference. It tends to pull supply, and we can get more supply, and it tends to make people think twice about their uses of various kinds of energy. But there are many other things that can be done, and the President has laid out quite a few of them in his various messages, and I won't go through that litany of measures. But it isn't purely voluntary by any means. For example, if you say, we're just not going to allocate fuel to certain uses of private jet aircraft, to get at your worry about the rich people and so on, that is a mandatory step that's taken, and you save so much fuel that way, and so on. And there are quite a number of things of that kind that can be helpful.
Are you willing to let prices go up by as much as 30 or 40 cents a gallon, which some people suggest is what's needed to cut consumption by, say, 20-25%?
The prices will go up first at the level of crude, and they are going up. Our imports come at very high prices now, much higher than the roughly $4.25 that our domestic price control holds. The price of so-called new crude that is allowed to find its own level in the marketplace is around $6. And so I think these prices are going to have to go up. And then those higher prices will find their way through the various uses of petroleum products.
Mr. Ellis.
Mr. Secretary, the President on November 25 said that the measures he already had proposed would take care of something over half of the anticipated shortfall and that further measures would be necessary. Now, to follow up Mr. Rowan's question, what further measures do you anticipate the President has in mind?
Well, just exactly what the President has in mind, I don't know. It is an evolving situation. Actions are taken regularly. For example, in the meeting that we had late last week, I guess it was Friday, a proposal was put forward by the Cost of Living Council for changing the price structure affecting the prices of gasoline and fuel oil in order to get refineries to change the distribution of their output and emphasize fuel oil more than gasoline. And there will be an action taken probably early this coming week, to implement that. And they're just a continuing series of things that need to be done. And what we need here is to get ourselves set and organized so that we have a real, strong, high-powered effort, action-oriented, to just look at these things as they come along and take the actions right away and really get cracking on this.
Millions of Americans are concerned that the energy crisis will not cost them less gasoline and heating oil, but perhaps their jobs as well. Now, Dr. Stein, chairman of the President's Council of Economic Advisers, says that he anticipates unemployment rising close to 6% next year if the Arab oil boycott persists throughout the year. Now, the National Petroleum Council, which is one of the prime sources for feeding technical data into the Interior Department, projects a 7.5% to 8% unemployment rate. Which do you think is correct?
Well, I think Dr. Stein is much closer to the mark, and I think these statements such as Mr. Rowan quoted of catastrophe and everything falling apart and so on are just not justified. Now, let me just give a couple of numbers to set it in perspective. First of all, let's remember, 85% of our energy is produced in the United States. Nobody can cut it off from us. It's produced here. Second, another roughly 7 or 8% comes in the form of petroleum from Canada and Venezuela. And we seem to be getting a continued flow of that oil. So when you look at it that way, you see our problem is something on the order of 8% to replace or somehow conserve against, and that's a lot. And it hits certain places harder than other places, so we have to take strong measures to allocate. But it's hard to see absolute catastrophe when you're getting 92-93% of your former energy.
Accepting Dr. Stein's figure of close to 6% unemployment, that's roughly 1 million persons out of work over and above the present figure today, what will the government do to help people who lose their jobs because of the energy crisis?
Well, I think we have to put a lot of reliance on our basic system of unemployment compensation, and I wish the Congress would go ahead with the proposal the President had made to them months ago to increase the general benefit levels under unemployment compensation for anyone who is unemployed for whatever reason. And I think that would help make these adjustments more easily. Now, there are all kinds of other things that can be done to help, and we should be doing them.
Mr. Carl Rowan.
Mr. Secretary, to add to the perspective, what is your most optimistic estimate as to how many years we will be in a crisis where there will be a steep shortage of gasoline, thermostats turned down, people being laid off? How many years?
Well, I think we need to approach the problem by saying that it is a long-term problem, and I don't know to what extent people will, when they will turn their thermostats up again and things of that kind. It is a long-term problem. We have to think about it that way, get through this immediate crisis, but not allow ourselves to get dependent on the Arab oil, the imported oil, and to take the measures that are necessary to provide us with an ample supply of energy in the longer run. And I think there's no question about the fact we're going to have to pay more for it, and we'll have to find some price where it'll top out when we have a price that makes it profitable to do things like get the oil out of the shale and things of that kind. Then we'll know that we have our supplies in hand.
Now, one of the questions on the minds of millions of Americans is, what do you propose to do to prevent some companies from profiteering while others run into tragedy? For example, why should you permit the oil companies already reaping huge profits to gain even more profits out of this crisis?
Well, it is important to create a sense in the country, and I think this gets to your problem about rationing. It's the main thing people think about with rationing, that a crisis is being met in a fair manner, and people are not profiteering on the one hand, and there's some sort of reasonable equity on the other. So I think it's important to have that in mind, and it seems to me we should expect, at a minimum, that these increased profits that will be made are plowed back in to the effort to improve our supplies of energy. And they go in there and they help us with this long-run problem. Now, it may be that we should consider various possible tax proposals as ways to deal with this equity problem. But at the same time, we have to remember it's the opportunity for a good rate of return that induces people to come into a line of business and work energetically at it.
Would you personally support an excess profits tax so that that money could be plowed back in?
I am not impressed with the way an excess profits tax works, but we are trying to see how we might design a type of tax that would help meet this short-run problem without the great problems that you tend to get into with an excess profits tax, which I think has the history of inducing people to undertake all kinds of uneconomic things. It just does not help us be an efficient and effective society.
Mr. Levine.
When you speak of looking into a possible tax, are you speaking of increasing the federal tax on each gallon of gasoline? If so, by how much?
That is one possibility that's discussed, and its main reason for being advocated is to get the price of gasoline up very high so that that high price does the actual rationing, which is the justification for that kind of proposal. It has all kinds of problems connected with it, particularly since it generates so much money, how you're going to use that money and redistribute it back into the economy, because you don't want to take out a lot of money and have the economy sag as a result. But that's one proposal that we have been studying.
In speaking of a fair distribution of fuel supplies, you mentioned jet aircraft fuel. Last Sunday, the President reduced by 42% the allocation of gas for general aviation, which includes pleasure flying by small aircraft. This created protests from the small aircraft industry, centered mainly near Wichita, Kansas, and protests from Senator Robert Dole, leading Republican from Kansas. The president has...
Protests by quite a few other people, I might say.
The president has now, yesterday, increased that allocation by 20% for small aircraft general aviation. Is it possible for allocation programs to succeed if the White House yields to that kind of pressure?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to recognize that when you are doing something new like this and you whack out a big shift in an allocation, that it's possible you underdo it, it's possible you overdo it, and so you ought to be ready to listen to what people have to say and make adjustments, and I hope that we have the good sense to do that. At the same time, I would say that as this system gets itself set up, it has to maintain a its own internal sense of integrity, which I would classify, among other things, as meaning that you have to accept the fact you're going to be hit by members of Congress all the time to change it around this way or that way, and you just have to stand up to it.
Mr. Rowan.
Mr. Secretary, I'd like to come back to your statement that we have 85% of our energy needs, and taking the 15% shortfall and applying the conservation measures you came up with.
Well, no. 85% is purely domestic. Then we get another 7 or 8% from Canada and Venezuela,
okay.
And we have not been cut off from that.
Okay, you came up with a net 8% shortfall figure.
Right.
The argument that is some people make is that you're not allowing for what would be the normal growth needs of the economy for energy. And as I understand it, we were counting on getting an average of 4% annual increment for the next several years from the Arab oil fields. Now, if we don't do anything beyond the limited measures that the president has put into effect, we're going to run into something much more serious than that 8% shortfall, are we not?
Oh, yes, and the measures that have been concentrated on in the last few weeks are essentially to meet the immediate short-term problem. But, as your namesake brought out in his questions, this is also a very important long-term problem, and your comments give some numerical content to that. I agree with that. So we must really push on and do things that are going to put us in a much better position.
But you keep saying we must push on, we should do that, and I don't think we have a concept of what it is the administration is actually planning to do.
Well, we finally have the Alaska Pipeline bill through. Everybody says it's going to take 6, 7, 8 years to build it. Nuts. Let's really get to work on that the way we have worked on other projects and see if we can't get that done more rapidly. I think that we have to do everything we can to push research on things like coal gasification. We have to allow the price of petroleum to be enough to justify the exploitation of the shale oil resources. We have to figure out how to use the very large and ample supplies of coal that we have. There are many things of that kind, and they've been addressed in various presidential messages, and I'm sure we haven't seen the end of the line by a long shot.
Have you considered the problem of inflation that will result if prices are allowed to rise either through the normal price system or through a tax system? Will we need to continue controls, for example, beyond the earlier planned expiration date?
Well, certainly, if you let prices of basic energy go up, that's going to have its impact on the various price indexes, and that's by definition practically. I think that's a different question than the question of whether overall control should be kept on or not at the time the law expires on April 30th. Certainly it puts more pressure on the inflation problem to have these energy prices, no doubt about it.
Less than 4 minutes left, gentlemen. Mr. Ellis?
Mr. Secretary, Project Independence. The President says he would like the United States to be independent of foreign sources of energy by 1980. Is that realistic? Can it be achieved by that date?
It can be achieved if we are willing to pay the price, to let the prices go up and let the market work, and if we are willing to put the tremendous energy that this country is capable of mounting into the effort. I think that the notion of independence does not mean no imports at all. It means that we have imports, all right, but we develop storage facilities, we develop surge capacity in some of our ways of producing energy, and various other things of that kind, so that while we import, we nevertheless shield ourselves from the threat of blackmail by somebody or another who threatens to cut off our energy. That's what independence means.
Is it accurate to say that next year Americans face higher prices than they did this year and higher unemployment no matter what we do?
No, not necessarily. That's a higher rate of increase in prices, I take it you mean. Mm-hmm. We are certainly going to have higher prices for energy. But we have some other things that will tend to moderate the rate of increase in prices. For example, I don't think that food prices will tend to shoot up in the way that they did in the particular first half of this year. Our dollar, which was devalued and was losing strength in the first half of this year, has gained strength and puts us in a better position in international markets. At the same time, to the extent that economies around the world soften a little bit, and I think they will, that will lessen the demand for raw materials, and therefore the prices of those things which have plagued us will go down some. So there are pluses and minuses here.
Mr. Rowan.
Mr. Secretary, the fact that William Simon has been announced as the man who's going to head a new federal power agency is interpreted as you and Mr. Simons having won the policy struggle over former Governor Love and Mr. DeBona. Is what you're saying today an indication that the president finally has made the decision to go your route and prices are going to go up wherever they go?
Well, first of all, there hasn't been any announcement. The newspapers, in their usual assiduous way, have been nosing around and trying to find out what's going on, and the president will make his announcement what he's going to do.
There have been some well-placed leaks, though.
There have been quite a few leaks, and I'm not going to comment on them beyond saying this, that I think the president thinks it's important to get all of the energy things organized in one place. He's been saying that for 2.5 years, and I believe he's going to just grab a hold of it and do it, and I think we'll get a lot of congressional support. Second, as far as Governor Love is concerned, he's done a great job in the policy end of this thing. Who will be the administrator, whether it will be Mr. Simon, remains to be seen in the presidential announcement. But if it is Mr. Simon, you can be sure that a terrific job will be done by him.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Rowan. Our time is up. Thank you, Mr. Secretary, for being with us today on Meet the Press.